You're listening to The Bulletin with UBS, first broadcast on the 2nd of August 2015 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're looking at Iran, following the conclusion of years of disagreement with the putative nuclear deal in Vienna last month. On the programme, we'll be exploring the implications on a local and international level and considering the impact of the deal on some of the key markets, in particular commodities, given Iran's oil wealth. UBS are not doing business in Iran, nor are there any plans to change that. However, the nuclear accord and its fallout have and will continue to exert a powerful influence across borders and markets. So we'll take the temperature and hear from some investors with first-hand experience of Iran. We start with Marcus George, leading Middle East analyst and regular Monocle contributor on Iran. Here's his take on the immediate economic implications of the deal.
We have to really look at this deal as leading to a possible transformational shift in the geopolitics of the whole region, Iran and Western countries. And that, of course, will enhance Iran's status in that region and provide all these benefits that you're talking about. Economically speaking, the list is endless. I mean, you know, if you have Iran's banking system that's been cut off from the rest of the world because of sanctions reconnected, then of course Iran and Iranian businesses will be able to trade freely again, especially when those sanctions are lifted. We can't really look at the economic benefits without including Iran's energy potential. It is one of the largest proven reserves of oil and gas, and of course that will be directly coming online as soon as the sanctions are lifted, and especially when Iran will be able to sign contracts with Western companies, and that is in the offing. It's already got a new international draft oil contract, which is being developed for next year when Western countries can start investing in Iran. So all those things, not least, obviously, lots of Western companies, conglomerates, looking to start tapping into what is one of the biggest frontier markets around the world today, untapped markets, then of course this is going to provide a huge boost to the Iranian economy, bringing jobs and prosperity over time.
Dominic Schneider is head of commodity research and head of APAC Forex in CIO Wealth Management at UBS. What was his initial reaction to the deal?
Well, if you look in terms of the deal that has been, the potential deal we're going to have between Iran and the West, I think we're looking at it from a global investment standpoint. Clearly, Iran is a very small economy, so the implication here for the global economy is rather small. Iran's size is around Austria or Colombia, so not that much of an impact at all. I think that needs to be taken into consideration. However, when it comes to crude oil, we do look at what could be the implication. Iran has one of the largest reserves globally, and the incremental supply that could come from Iran could really lead to a point where the oil market, which is oversupplied quite a fair bit, we left first half of this year with more than 2 million barrels of excess supply, that could be that recovery or this rebalancing in the oil market could definitely be delayed by additional Iranian barrels coming to market, in case you're going to see here an environment where these talks and this deal that we have really comes fully into place.
Chris Wright, cross-asset strategist in the CIO at UBS Wealth Management, shares his view of what recent developments mean in the short term.
Clearly the big implication is on oil and oil prices. We know Iran has a lot of oil reserves. I read that they have enough to supply China's current consumption for the next 42 years. So the removal of sanctions on Iran will clearly increase global supply. So this asks the question, you know, what will happen to oil prices over the coming year? Now, oil prices are mainly driven by the excess supply in the market. So while Iranian oil, which is likely to come on the market later this year, will certainly add to the supply, this is being balanced by a decline in the number of U.S. oil rigs in operation right now, which is around 60% lower than it was 10 months ago, and also on the demand side too. So global demand for oil continues to increase as the global economy expands. So I think kind of taking these in balance, overall, we are still bullish on oil over the next 12 months. And we'd expect Brent to rise up to $72 a barrel. So it will have an effect, but we think there's other outside effects which are having a bigger impact.
Kian Farugi is an entrepreneur, investor and advisor and a mentor at Arvatech, Iran's first technology accelerator. He too sets the scene in Iran's post-2006 sanctions-affected landscape.
Iran has basically, since the beginning of 2006, been cut off from the rest of the world, cut out of the world trading system. They couldn't export oil. They couldn't do dollar transactions. They couldn't transact anymore with reputable banks. Iran was essentially a pariah state that was cut off from the rest of the world. And all of this is going to come to an end, and hopefully quite soon. People don't know the exact date for the lifting of the sanctions at the moment, because they'll only be removed once it's approved by U.S. Congress, which it looked like it will be. But once it's been approved by U.S. Congress, sanctions will only come up once the IAEA has issued a report verifying the implementation of all the nuclear-related measures by Iran.
We've heard some views on the deal and maybe a note of cautious optimism for the future, but what does the actual process of any economic reintegration of Iran actually look like? Particularly on the commodity side, one thing is for certain, says Dominic Schneider, it's going to take a long time.
Well, if you look in terms of some of the framework, clearly it takes a long period of time, and I think it's going to step by step, you're going to see here the integration taking place, things need to be fulfilled before things are lifted. So it's probably going to be a long period, and people who have like high expectations that a very quick integration can happen might be disappointed. Iran is actually holding around 40 million barrels in oil or condensate, something which is close to oil, in storage, so that could find its way rather quickly into the global economy. Now, in terms of increasing its production, that will take time, and then I think people underestimate. So Iran was exporting so slightly a little bit north of a million barrel per day, and I think this could increase probably by 0.5 to 0.8 million barrels over the course of 2016, given all the conditions are right that Iran can again trade freely.
What does the actual process look like in Marcus George's view?
Well, it's going to be quite slow. And I think what we've had is this breakthrough agreement, which was signed earlier this month. But over the next few months, then both sides will have to start putting in place what they agreed to do. Iran, of course, had to meet its conditions in nuclear terms, in technical terms, in terms of shutting off centrifuges, and of course the US and other Western nations comprising the P5+1 group of countries will have to start moving towards sanctions removal. And that has already started. The UN has made a new resolution to lift those sanctions as and when the deal is effectively put into implementation. That's going to take months.
In the event that things do indeed move along, what are the mechanics of the process, according to Chris Wright?
Well, I think it's really interesting is some of the comments we heard from our industry leader network over the last couple of weeks. So this is a group of large UBS clients who we speak to each month to understand how, you know, current affairs are affecting their businesses. So this month when we spoke to them, completely unprompted, a number of them brought up the topic of Iran as a potential growth market for them that is now obviously open for business. Now, that's clearly anecdotal, and I don't think that the Iran deal will have a large impact on the global economy, but I think there certainly is the potential for Iran's domestic economy to maybe really benefit from here, particularly if foreign capital from the region and elsewhere is deployed and invested in Iran over the coming years.
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look in a little more detail at the possibilities for businesses in Iran and assess the lie of the political landscape too. It's clear from the Western media coverage of the deal and its aftermath that a lot of assumptions are made from afar about the political dynamics within Tehran. Marcus George explains the political realities of Iran post-deal.
I think this is a very interesting question. Certainly politically, on the one hand, on face value from this deal, you have a relatively moderate government which has been able to secure a deal, and that has effectively empowered it. It's used its mandate when it was elected in 2013, the President Hassan Rouhani, and he has used that to forge this deal because he's had the people behind him. However, we have to remember that Iran has its leadership, its theocratic leadership, And under that leadership, it has its network of security institutions, which take a very hard-line stance. And they're very much opposed to any reconciliation with the West. They're worried about their own loss of power and influence. And because of that, they're sort of pretty much set to against the moderate government. So what we will see is sort of, to varying extent over the coming months, is clashes between those two elements, if you like. And already we've seen it to a certain degree. We'll see it a lot more. And there will be a tussle, certainly behind the scenes, as there always is, between the government, the presidency, if you like, the more sort of, you know, formal or conventional political leadership, and of course Iran's very own special theocratic leadership, which fears ultimately that perhaps this is the opening to what is a secularization process in Iran leading to its own downfall. I think that is their own very great existential fear.
Major geopolitical events can exert a big influence. Does this provide a timely reminder then of how attuned analysts in any area or sector need to be? Most definitely, says Dominic Schneider.
Well, if you look in terms of from a global perspective, we do take into consideration these political risks. And what we try to do, we try to rate them and look at what's the probability that it could affect certain asset classes. So I think what is important here is to really have a proper framework where you try to make sure, hey, you can properly categorize the risks out there, because political risks are for, let's say, for strategy teams who are looking into investments globally, obviously sometimes not very transparent. So being aware of the risk, and sometimes you'd say, listen, there are certain risks which obviously have too much impact, even if things go right. If, let's say, additional oil comes out of Iran beyond, let's say, the 0.5 to a 0.8 million barrels, and Iran suddenly would produce 1.2 million additional, and that could really delay. So these things are taken into consideration when it comes to investment. I think what is important is to have a proper framework and also the resources behind it to make sure you cover these risk factors properly.
There's clearly a great deal of political complexity, if not uncertainty, involved when it comes to Iran. How do and how should outsiders read this? Kian Farugi again.
Iran is a country with a lot of bureaucracy and multiple regulations. I think as an investor, especially a foreign investor, learning how to navigate through these is going to take time. And it also requires some familiarity with the way Iranians do business and experience. And that's why I think most investors or foreign businesses that are looking to invest in Iran and have a presence on the ground would probably do better by initially looking for a suitable local partner who knows the market and also has some international business knowledge and experience, because it can be quite initially, I guess, surprising for people who come to Iran to see, you know, how business is done there. It's still this old mentality from the days of almost the Silk Road of commerce and merchants and trade, and, you know, sometimes legal recourse is not where it should be, and investors might not get the same comfort that they're used to in Western markets that other legal systems would provide. But I think with the country opening up, I mean, finding these partners will be easier. And the government also is going to seek to reduce the bureaucracy and make setting up a business and doing business in Iran a little bit easier than it is currently.
Let's look next at any potential knock-on effects of last month's deal around the world. Firstly, does what's happened actually have a knock-on effect? Not so, says Dominic Schneider.
Well, I wouldn't say they have a knock-on effect around the world. I think, first of all, yes, I think we do see interest is there. Obviously, some, as I mentioned, some of the infrastructure is old and there is potential. There are fields, things to develop, so that's clearly there. But we also need to take into consideration two factors. First of all, there is the legal uncertainty, which still plays a big role. I mean, even though you maybe lift here and there some sanctions, there's still a lot of restrictions in place. And so that comes with still a lot of uncertainty and risks, which I think maybe hamper still investments. So I think that's why it takes time until you see here probably bigger investment taking place from the energy industry. But that can change quite quickly depending on how well things later on advance. I think that's one factor to consider. The other factor to consider is for many of the oil companies, given that oil prices have dropped so dramatically, it's really the question here about preserving capital, making sure you don't spend too much. So in this environment where we already have too much oil around the world and you see CapEx cuts, what we saw so far this year, down 25%. So the willingness to really engage in big investments might be constrained, given that oil prices simply are not that attractive.
What about some of the other potential opportunities, particularly for those already engaged in Iran? Entrepreneur and investor Kian Farugi has such experience and is interested in the potential of Iran's new markets.
I think it's mostly consumer-centric sectors that are the most interesting and the most sought after. Iran is the world's largest remaining frontier market. I mean, it's larger than Cuba and Myanmar put together, both in terms of size, but more importantly, in terms of economic opportunity. The population, nearly 80 million people with cost-competitive, educated labor force, 64% of the population is below 35. There's about 30 million smartphones estimated in Iran, and 92% of Iranians have a bank account with debit cards. So consumer-centric sectors are going to be the most sought after. Think about it. Most of the big brands that we all know and love and enjoy out here in Europe and the West and elsewhere in the world is not present in Iran. So food and beverage is going to be big. Clothing, retail, luxury franchises. I mean, Tehran alone, there's at the moment 60 different malls that are in construction in Tehran and the capital and its neighboring areas.
And considering the impact of the deal in terms of global monetary policy, are there any obvious ramifications on the policy side? Dominic Schneider.
Now, if you look in terms of global monetary policy, I think everybody talks about the Fed and when it will take off. Keep in mind the Fed looks really at core PCE, so there is no crude oil included. However, if you go, let's say, beyond the Fed and you look at other economies, especially in emerging markets, they often don't just look at the core rate, so they often look at the headline. And as crude oil is part of the CPI, if you're really going to see a lot of oil coming from Iran, the possibility of delay in the recovery in the crude oil price would mean that price pressure into 2016 might not show up. And I would give, especially for a lot of economies in emerging market, where the central bank would give it the opportunity to actually keep rates low, in some cases maybe even further cut rates, in order to make sure that the economy is on a solid footing, especially those economies where we see that struggle with growing. So Iran could have actually an impact on global monetary policy, less to the US, but more to emerging market, that monetary policy remains growth supportive in a sense that rates going to stay low or even go lower to support recent struggling areas that we have seen in emerging market.
And that's Dominic Schneider, bringing us to the end of this 43rd edition of the Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance every week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via iTunes or SoundCloud. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.